Hello, I am Donna Freeman, the founder of Yoga in My School, and this is the Yoga in My School podcast. I appreciate you coming and having a listen. Thank you for your likes, your shares, your comments, and your ratings. It truly is a blessing as it helps others to find us. The purpose of the Yoga in My School podcast is to empower you to share yoga and mindfulness with youth. Through the archives and this episode in particular, I know that you will receive inspiration, knowledge, and tools to help you do so. We also are big fans of building community, and we love finding people who are doing amazing things in the kids yoga community worldwide. So if you know of someone, or maybe you are someone who are doing something incredible and you'd like to share it, feel free to reach out. You can email me, donna@yogainmyschool.com, with ideas for upcoming episodes. Appreciate you listening. Have a wonderful day and enjoy this episode.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Donna Freeman of Yoga in My School and Kids Yoga Academy, and I'm here today with a wonderful guest who is truly one of the grandmothers of children's yoga. So it is a pleasure to be able to chat and about her 40 years teaching kids yoga. And before we get into all of that, though, I do want to make sure that you guys all know about the iTunes podcast, where you can see all of, or listen to, all of the previous episodes. There are over 100 episodes we've got there, as well as all of the resources we have available on Pinterest and online at yoganmyschool.com. So be sure to go and check all of those out. Today we're going to be chatting with Shakta Khalsa, and she is the founder of Radiant Child Yoga. And she has been teaching children's yoga for 40 years now and is truly one of the founders of this movement. I sometimes say to people, you know, when I started teaching kids yoga back in the, you know, in about 2002, people would look at me like, "You're crazy. What are you doing? Why would you do that?" I can't imagine what it was like when Shakta began. And so we're going to find out a little bit about what the early roots of the children's yoga movement were like, and how much children's yoga and yoga in general has changed over the years. Because sometimes we like to imagine or think that what it looks like today is what it's always been like. And that, I don't think, is the case. So let's talk to one of our founders, Shakta Kaur Khalsa. Shakta, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Excellent. Thank you, Donna.
It's great to be able to chat with you today, and congratulations on celebrating 40 years of teaching children's yoga.
Oh, thank you. I just realized last year, hey, wait a minute, didn't I start teaching kids yoga in 1977? Oh, yeah, so it's coming up 40 years.
Well, that is quite the milestone, and very few of us can say that we have been had a passion for something for as long as you have, and the influence that you've had has been tremendous. I know that Yoga Journal has described you as one of the top five Kundalini teachers in the world, and I know that the teachings that you have shared and your book and those type of things have a huge impact on children's yoga around the world to this day. And so I thank you for that early work and for setting the foundation that the rest of us have kind of built on. And I would like to talk a little bit about that foundation.
Well, thank you so much. Who would have ever known that just starting to teach kids yoga in 1977 in our Kundalini yoga ashram would lead to anything at all? I mean, if someone would have told me that this was going to be your life's work, I would have just stared at them blankly, I think, because it happened so innocently. It was that I lived in a Kundalini yoga ashram, which is a spiritual community where we all share the work, and we all work together at a natural food store called the Golden Temple, and we all did a morning practice. And so the children in the ashram, there were a couple little ones, they also had a practice. So every so often it would be, we would rotate who was going to lead the yoga with the kids. And as soon as I started doing it, I realized, hey, you know what, this is so much fun. And I had so much creativity for it. And I was having them hiss like snakes, and we were making up stories, and they were having such a good time. That's how it all began. But I think in 1977, if you would have said to me, hey, this is going to be your life work, I would have said, no, I don't know what you're talking about. You know. So from there, what happened was that I just began to truly love being with children and working with children. And so I got a job at the Children's Montessori School where I was the assistant, and my specialty was teaching them yoga every day. And then from being the assistant there, I loved the Montessori method, and it went so well with the yogic teachings of follow the child and, you know, just kind of be very tuned in. Like Maria Montessori was a very tuned in person. That's
yes,
all I can
was.
Say. And so from there, what happened was that I just became a teacher myself, an AMS certified teacher, and had my own school then in the 1980s in Baltimore, Maryland, where I was living at the time. And of course, our kids did yoga every day before they did their Montessori work. And then when they had rest time, I'd put on some beautiful guided relaxations. I would make them up myself. The children would do some of the things that are still part of Radiant Child training, like the waterfall massage. On each other, they would do that as like from the head downward is very relaxing, like a waterfall. They would do that with each other. And then I saw that the kids were so tuned in that I realized that they understood about energy. And so I started just saying, okay, now we're going to do the waterfall, but just on the energy field. So just imagine a beautiful field of light around your friend, and you're just going to smooth the energy out on that. And these kids, these were preschoolers that I taught, there was not a blink of an eye on that. That was just like totally normal. In fact, I think they were happy that there was an adult speaking about something that they understood, but they never heard anybody speak about, like that we have energy fields or that we're made of energy or anything like that, whether or not that's what they called it. You know, so it was a wonderful time period for me. I had that school for 6 years in Baltimore, Maryland.
Well, then I know for myself, you know, you learn some stuff, and then you go and apply it, and the application is what really teaches you. And I'm
sure, and
with all of the students that I mentor now, they're so fortunate when they can take whatever theory they're learning and apply it and just see how it works and watch the interaction with the children. So the fact that you were able to do that, it's like, okay, here's this, let's see how it works. Oh, look, these kids totally respond to that. Awesome. Okay, let's try this.
To
learn through doing as a teacher is so valuable. That's wonderful that you could, you know, be there and experience it.
I feel so too. And one of the teachings of my teacher, Yogi Bhajan, always was that children were much more than we thought they were, and that they weren't just these cute little things wearing cute little clothing and stuff like that, that they were actually very wise and connected souls. And so by seeing the children that way, they let that light, they let that part of themselves shine toward me. And I just saw it more and more. And I found that teachers were like my teachers. They were my gurus. That children would just become that for me because they were so naturally connected to who they truly are. And the way I like to say this in Radiant Child is that children are big souls in little bodies. And that's what I discovered in the 1970s and the 1980s and then on into the 90s was just that these children, when you see them that way, then they show you that part of themselves, because I think that they just go along with what's expected of them. And if they're treated like, oh, these kind of annoying little kids, then they'll act that way. And if they're treated with more respect and realize, okay, so they're having a hard day, what can we do to change this? And we get down on their level and look eye to eye and things like that. And it makes the biggest difference in the yoga class and in your class management for a yoga class as well.
Yes, I find the same, right? Your class management has so much to do with how you view them.
Yes, exactly.
What energy am I coming in with, and coming from that area of respect and love?
Yeah, I feel like if you, like this is one of the things I say a lot in my training courses, is that you are the yoga that you bring to the children in everything you do. Yoga isn't like some other things. Let's say, okay, we're teaching somebody math. Well, you're just, you know, you can just teach them math, but in yoga, you really need to embody the essence of what it is you're teaching. And that's actually the main thing that the children pick up on, because there's different frequencies of energy depending on how we feel. When we feel down and out, it has a certain frequency, you could say. And when we're feeling relaxed and connected and happy, connected and centered, then we have another frequency, and the children really pick up on these things. So I'm amazed sometimes that, like, there's a story that I just thought of this morning, which was one of my yoga classes with the kids. This is in the 90s when I started teaching outside of my school. I started going out to different yoga centers, and mostly they were schools and daycare centers. And I remember one little three-year-old girl, she took one yoga class with me, and then she went home. And then the next week when she came in, her mother reported that she was with her daughter on the playground, and it was very chaotic with a lot of yelling and pushing and this and that was going on, just a lot of noise and chaotic energy. The little girl, who was three, sat down beside her mother on the bench, and she just looked at her mom, and she went like, "Oh, I really need some yoga." Mm. And what was remarkable about that to me was she had one class, and she understood what yoga was all about, and she was able to recognize where it applied in this chaotic environment in just with one class, and she was 3 years old. So I never underestimate children.
Yeah, they're quite remarkable.
Yeah.
I want you to tell me a little bit about Akalji. I hope I'm saying her name right. Your first student.
Akaljeet. You just Akaljeet. Say the Akal part, a little more emphasis. Akaljeet. Well, Akaljeet was the first child in the ashram because her parents were the originators of that particular ashram, Kundalini ashram in Baltimore. And so we all did yoga with Akaljeet. And then another child came to live. Actually, the next child that came to live there was one that my husband and I parented for 3 years, a little girl who was just a little bit younger than Akaljeet. So those two were best friends, and they would do yoga together. And in this little slideshow that I put together, you can see Satbir and Akaljeet together on those slides. So that was kind of fun. And then I stayed in touch with Akaljeet's parents and with Akaljeet herself, and they moved out to Colorado. And when I go to Colorado, I visit them. And I've always stayed in touch with Akaljeet. She's always such a sweet, very kind person. You couldn't just meet a more naturally kind person than her. And then the fact that she, you know, has a child, she teaches her own child yoga, and that she really, you know, she really just thanked me so much for, you know, being her original teacher. And I was her teacher also in the Montessori school too. So we had such a beautiful history together, and now she is a yoga teacher too. And, so it's just very satisfying to see that whole cycle, you know, just it's sort of like the cycle of existence, but it keeps elevating more and more as these children grow up with yoga. Then either they teach it themselves or they just embody the principles of them and they pass them on to their own children. It's just you can see how the evolution of our world can keep growing and getting better and better with each generation. It's a wonderful vision, wonderful vision.
Mm-hmm. It sure is. And now I want you to explain a little bit. So you're living at this ashram, working at a Montessori school, living life, fostering children, busy, very involved, obviously. So how did it go from that to Radiant Child Yoga?
Very naturally, my husband and I, my husband was working in Herndon, Virginia, which was about an hour and a half drive from Baltimore, and he was commuting for years. After a while, it just seemed apparent that we needed to move to Northern Virginia. And so when we did move there, and I have to back up and say something very important. My husband and I had been married almost 14 years at that point, and for 11 of those years, we had been trying to have a child. And it never was happening. And I was just beginning to think, like, maybe it's just my destiny to be a mother to all children on this earth and to foster raise children and do things like that. But there was a part of me that was just had a lot of heartache about that, much more than my husband did. And then when we moved to Virginia, through just some very beautiful, prayerful energy that I felt came from my teacher, Yogi Bhajan, which was kind of a miraculous story in itself, where we asked him for help. And when we sent the letter to ask him for help, I got pregnant. And it was the only time in my whole life, before or after that, never one before, never after, just at one time, this little window was open. And that's when our son was born. So that was 1991. And then I really wanted to be a mother, but I also knew that I wanted to do some other things, and also we needed some income. So I thought, okay, well, I know how to teach kids yoga. So I started calling up Montessori schools in Virginia where I lived, and pretty soon I was teaching about 500 children a week, mostly Montessori schools, but also some daycare centers. And then from there, what happened was that everything evolved so naturally. I did that for about 5-6 years. And especially this one particular Montessori school where my son went to, my exchange with them was that I would teach the kids and he would get to come to school at a discount. So I taught them for 5 years. He went to that school for 5 years, and I taught in the school for 5 years. And those are the children that you see in Fly Like a Butterfly. So when people look at that book, just know that when you see an 8- or 9-year-old child in that book, they'd already been doing yoga with me for 5 years. They were already 5 years of experience of doing yoga because they started age 3 there. So it was really amazing how that led to the book, because everybody was saying to me, hey, you know, why don't you write a book on this? So what I did was it was the beginning of computers. So somebody made put a makeshift computer together for me. I had to learn how to use it. And then this was like 1995 or something. It was like some makeshift Mac. And actually, I only know how to use a Mac. Even to this day, I can only use a Mac. I never have used a PC. I don't know what to do on them. So it's kind of a funny thing. So I wrote the Fly Like a Butterfly book, just like I teach. I just wrote it out like I was teaching so that people can actually pick it up. And if they don't know what to do, they can show the pictures to the children and they can just read the words, you know. And we're going to take an airplane ride, and that's put our feet together, bring our arms out, etc. So it's kind of written that way. And after I wrote that book, then I wanted to write a book on Kundalini yoga. So I contacted Dorling Kindersley, a very big publisher, and they picked up that book and wanted me to write two more books after that. So I wrote Kiss Guide to Yoga and Yoga for Women. And this is all happening in a period of about 5 years. I wrote 5 books in 5 years. I don't know how I did it, but that's what I was doing. Sometimes I was working on one book, finishing up one book and writing another one at the same time. But also as part of that, about 1999 or so, I just felt there was something else that I needed to do. I felt I need to return to my initial passion, which was children. And so many people were getting the Fly Like a Butterfly book and saying, oh, could you teach me more about how to do this? So that's when I developed Radiant Child Yoga. It was about 1999. I was still writing books. I wrote books up to about 2001. But I started the program. I started traveling. I had a little manual. It just grew and grew and grew, so that in the first part of the millennium, I started training trainers. So I had trainers in every continent, basically, except Antarctica. We haven't got there yet. But in every continent. And then I started developing the program more and more. So that at that point, I stopped writing books. And I just totally focused on the vision that I had, which was, you know, it doesn't take that much to change a life. Let's start with them when they're young. Let's bring them these tools when they're young and they still know who they are and they still feel connected to who they are. And that's been my passion really for all these years. And it's a very satisfying passion because I get to put a lot of creativity into it. I get to see the results of people getting trained in Radiant Child Yoga and then emailing me and saying, oh man, I have more people asking me to do kids yoga than I can even manage. And some of them are sending people to be trained so that they can work with them. You know, things like that. I'm sure other training programs are seeing the same thing happening where it's just really exploding. One thing I like to compare it to is when martial arts first came to the West, it was mostly adults doing martial arts. And then as time went on, more classes were for children. And then there was more training for teaching children martial arts. And I see this as similar, you know, it's kind of an analogy that works for me as far as what's happening with yoga. Yoga, a lot of adults understand that yoga really helps them. And so it's a natural second thought, which is, hey, wouldn't this be great for my kids? Or if I'm a teacher, wouldn't this be great for my students? This is, you know, it makes so much sense that it would trickle down to children. But actually, I don't like that word trickle down because I don't think of it as a trickle down. I think of it as its own custom-made program for children. It's not like adults yoga. It's really is something that's unique to children. And I'm saying children all the way from babies through teenagers. It's unique to them at each stage and phase of their lives.
Yeah, so, isn't that true? You know, kids yoga looks very different whether it's preschoolers or 14-year-olds.
Oh yeah. Oh, for sure, for sure. I'm even surprised sometimes. I have a preteen group that I work with, and I come in and I'm expecting them to be like kind of like teenagers, and then they say to me things like, oh, can we start with a spaghetti test? And they all want to lie down, you know, and me to come around and shake their arm and see if they're like a cooked noodle or not. And I'm like, I'm amazed. I'm so happy that they still have some childlike quality within them, you know, that they aren't completely sophisticated and jaded yet, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so wonderful to see them explore life at each stage.
It really is. I feel, but one thing that I do want to mention is, and this has got to do with the fact that I have a pretty panoramic view of this yoga for children coming into our world, into our Western world, and that is when yoga got popular in the 90s, the thing that I started, I mean, I was happy because that meant more people would be doing yoga, but one of the things that I saw happened, and this is natural, is that because yoga will meet you where you're at, it came to the masses, it changed. And it became mostly about postures. And at its worst, it became about looking good. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You understand what I mean, right?
Oh, for
so
sure.
When you see these yoga magazines, you know, if you really put what the essence of yoga was on a magazine, it wouldn't look sensational because it's all happening on the inside. So they try to put something that looks sensational on the outside. And I have to admit that I've had some critical thinking about that. And now I just realize, okay, Shakta, you have a different history than a whole lot of people do. And so you got to realize that it's meeting people where they're at, but I hope people will take where they're at and realize that and really research yoga. Look into the ancient yogis and how they lived in caves with a loincloth and how they didn't even age because they were in a timeless moment. Like, that's the real essence of yoga. It's not just about wearing the right clothes and having the right, and then doing a yoga posture out in nature, you know, and taking a picture of yourself. All of those things, okay, if that's a starting point, fine, but really the essence of yoga is so much deeper, and that's why I wanted to just, if we have a moment, I wanted to talk for a little bit about how do we incorporate more of the essence of yoga or the roots of yoga with children.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great. That's a really great question. So, right, you've got these roots of yoga, and, you know, kids mm-hmm. aren't going to be on the cover of a magazine because they can't, right?
Yeah.
They do better down dogs than we
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
But they don't do, it's not sensationalized
yeah.
with children. It's very pure. So tell me a little
yeah.
bit about how you see
yeah.
these roots of yoga
okay.
in interacting with children.
Well, this really came to life for me when I was putting together this 40 years of a celebration of 40 years of teaching kids yoga, because I was looking through my photos and pictures for something that showed me teaching yoga to kids in the ashram or in the Montessori school, and I didn't have any. And I even put this right on the video that I made, which anybody can find if they want to. It's on Shakta Khalsa YouTube channel. And what I realized was that the roots of yoga are that yoga has to do with how you live your life. It's not about the postures. That's just one of the eight limbs, so it's only one eighth of what yoga is. So when I take the eight limbs of yoga and how you live a life of integrity, that's the first two limbs of yoga, yamas mm-hmm. and niyamas. How do you live
yeah.
a life of integrity? And so that's what we did in the ashram. And living a life of integrity didn't kind of call forth the idea of, hey, let's take some pictures of the kids doing yoga, because it would have felt like it was invading their sacred space at that time. So we didn't do anything like that. I have zero pictures of kids doing yoga, I have to tell you. Of course, these are the days
mm-hmm.
before cell phones anyway, so we weren't going around taking pictures all the time like we'll do now. And then the next limb of yoga, which is the third limb, is about postures and exercises. We call them exercises in Kundalini, but postures in
mm-hmm.
Hatha. That's the part that we mostly pay attention to in yoga, because you can see it, because
yeah.
it's outward. Okay, so that's the third
mm-hmm.
limb of yoga. And that helps you get ready for the last limbs of yoga. This is the way I always think of it. The postures and the exercises prepare you for the last limbs of yoga, and they have to do with the fourth one, pranayama, which is breathing practice, or getting prana, bringing prana in through your breath, through the foods you eat, through being out in nature, you get prana. So pranayama, we usually think of it only as breathing, but it actually incorporates all of that. This is,
mm-hmm.
these are ways we get prana, eating healthy, being in nature. These are all parts of yoga, actually. And then we get to the last four limbs, which are my favorite to talk about, because they all have to do with the meditative mind. So like the first one, pratyahara, is watching what your mind does and then bringing it back. And you can do that in everyday life. So just to give you an idea of how you can do that with kids is in Radiant Child Yoga, we have something called Puppy on a Leash. And puppy
mm-hmm.
on a leash means, well, we want to meditate today, and our mind likes to wander all around, doesn't it? It's just like a puppy, and you don't want your puppy to go out in the street or get lost, so we put the puppy on a leash when we're meditating, just like we put a puppy on the leash whenever we want it to stay with us. So our mind is on a leash. That means we want the mind to go where we want it to go. So let's say a fly goes buzzing by. Well, what does our puppy mind want to do? It wants to open its eyes and say, ooh, don't land on me. You know, I make it kind of dramatic with the kids so
yeah.
that they
oh, for
have
sure.
fun with it. Yeah, yeah. And then they say, but then we remember, oh, wait, my puppy mind is on a leash. I'm meditating now. So let me just go back. My eyes are closed. I'm breathing again. I'm doing whatever it is the meditation we're doing. Maybe it's pressing our fingers. Maybe it's breathing. Maybe it's blowing a feather. Whatever it is, I'm going to bring it back. So this is one way we describe to children that idea of pratyahara, which is puppy on a leash. So we have like little fun ways of working with these deeper concepts with kids. And then another one could be dharana, which is focusing on one thing to the exclusion of everything else. And I know that a lot of teachers use the mind jar or mindfulness. That's a great example of dharana, because you turn the jar over and the glitter starts floating down and the children are breathing while they're watching that. And then they're very one-pointed. That's dharana. So we actually do use all these in kids' yoga. We just make them
oh, for sure.
very customized. Yeah, customized
mm-hmm.
for children. And then the next one is called dhyan. And dhyan is without a particular focus, but just being present to just this now. And there's so many ways we can do that. Maybe like blowing on a feather. We're watching the feather, and we're noticing when we blow the soft, fluffy feathers that we have a long, slow breath. And when we blow on the top, stiff feather, we have a short, fast breath. Now we're noticing in the moment. We're being present in the moment. So we actually use all the eight limbs of yoga whenever we teach kids yoga. And if we forget to do that, what happens is it looks like creative movement, or it looks like just play. You see, yeah. We're going like, okay, now let's be a doggy. All right, now we're going to be a cat and cow. All right, everybody stand up and we'll do this. And we forget the focus and the breath. So that's a really important part that keeps all those meditative emphasis on the meditative parts. And now we really do have a yoga class. And then
exactly.
We have something
Shakta,
to give the children to take with them. Uh-huh.
We only have about 30 seconds left, so I want to say
thank you.
I know, it just cruised by. Thank you for all your hard work and for this breadth and scope that you've provided of children's yoga and really taking it from creative movement to something so much more.
Oh, thank you so much, Donna, for all the beautiful work you're doing, too.
All right. So you can find a lot more information about Shakta on her website, radiantchildyoga.com, and definitely check out her beautiful book.
It's actually childrensyoga.com.
Childrensyoga.com. I know. I just Google it. I type in Radiant Child Yoga, and it always comes up. All right.
Oh,
you
okay.
Take care of
okay.
yourself, and congratulations, my dear.
Thank you. Bye-bye.